Baptist Church in Ontario, Ohio. I'm Pastor Dave Davenport. Today we're studying in 2 Timothy, and we're in chapter 3. I trust you'll have your Bible open and stay with us for the next several minutes as we go to the Word. You realize, right, pretty much every one of us has probably heard of the first rule of being a lifeguard, right? Let them drown. Let them drown, and then grab them and pull them out and then give them a CPR, right? If you go in there and you try to grab them when they're thrashing, they'll take you down, right? Have you heard this, right? This is kind of common knowledge. You're supposed to let them lose their own fight so that then you can pull them out. And we have to be mindful. We have to withdraw sometimes. People need to hit the wall. They need to hit bottom or whatever. Sometimes it's our own children. You say, well, that doesn't sound very Christian. Well, yeah, it does. Remember the prodigal son? Give me all that I have coming to me. The father said, okay. You know, you have everything here. Why do you want that? Well, I want it. Just give it to me. And he went and spent it all. You know, he had this huge bank account now, just like we have. You know, when we got born into this world, we had legs and hands and eyes. And we had capacity for good and greatness and all those things. And sometimes we just sabotaged ourselves, right? And it's not till we come back limping like, you know, Jacob did, leaning on a staff, we're worshiping. I learned my lesson, and he worshiped leaning on the staff. And sometimes you got to let him, because even in the prodigal son's story, he fell to the end of himself, and he remembered, I got a father. He'll certainly let me at least be one of his servants. And he went home with just the willingness to be a servant. Guess what he was? He was broken, right? He wasn't fierce anymore. He was broken. He came back, and the father ran, put his arms around him, protected him from society that would have wanted to have stoned him for his dissipation. And what happened? He gave him a ring, which was like giving him a checkbook. Gave him shoes on his feet, robes, and he killed the fatted calf. Listen, Jesus is waiting for us. If we're believers and off in left field, he'll let you fall down. He'll let you embarrass yourself. He'll let you humiliate yourself. It's all on you. But you've got the way home because you know it's there. And if you don't take it, you will find that there will be a consequence to the behavior. We have to be mindful of that. And that will help diminish our strength if we're not careful, right? Perilous times diminish strength. And some people are wearing themselves out. And we don't know whether they're saved or not. But if they're living like this, we need to withdraw and not keep company. Evil company corrupts good morals. Verse 6 says, for of this sort are they that creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, it's interesting because this word for silly women has always troubled me. It's the only place in the Bible it's used, and it's not used in any extra-biblical places that really shed much light on it. But in essence, the commentators are pretty much agreed. What it means is little women. Now, when I ponder that, I think, well, what does that mean? I think what it means, this is me taking Scripture, putting brick to brick, all the things Song of Solomon's Shulamite girl told all the women, don't wake love till it's time and all that, is that many times young girls come up and they don't understand how amazing they are. And when guys see them and they fawn over them, and they do it even to a fault sometimes, the girls get full of themselves because they don't know what's really going on. They can be 14, 15 years old and people are turning their heads and they're like, what is this? This feels pretty good. I like being looked at. That is natural. However, the problem is if you don't have a biblical foundation, you don't know what that's about. A little woman is somebody who doesn't know why things are as they are. And God designed male and female, designed female to be a help for the male. And a little woman is a woman who doesn't have the greater plot, being saved in childbearing. Because once they have kids, what happens? They get to bring up a child to know Jesus and go to heaven. They get to bring up children to save a society from moral decadence because they're going to raise up boys with character. They get to raise up girls who have character who help other boys. They keep perpetuating a godly seed. This is part of what was so interesting about reminding ourselves of the Egyptian bondage. Just around 70 people went into Egypt and they came out 1.5 million strong. 1.5 million! Over a course of time, they got so big. Why? Well, because they had children. Now, at first they weren't oppressed, but then they had more children, and then they got under bondage, and the next thing you know, the greatest thing they had was each other. Do you hear that? The greatest thing they had was each other. And a little woman doesn't understand that the greatest thing she has is her husband and her kids. A little woman. See, I'm not talking to those today. I'm talking to you. But we understand that some women don't understand. They think it's about them, and they'll trade in their husband, get another one because they can. And life has become pretty much their oyster, and they've lost the plot. And these are silly women. And I think it's mentioned because it's in the context, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Men are going to come in, and they're going to creep into houses, and they're going to lead captive because the men aren't going to be protecting the women, and the women aren't going to be protecting the men, and they're all led away with diverse lusts. You know, this is the only place that I can think of where women are associated with lust. So that's something to keep in mind, because lust seems to be more a self-preoccupation. A little woman wanting to maybe overcome the men or whatever, it starts when they start seeing the heads turn and perhaps can become something of a, I got to have more of that. There's a guy who recently was talking about the Facebook, social media. He says, you know, people are now geared toward getting a hit. They need another dopamine hit, you know, a thrill that somebody watched their video on, you know, YouTube or on Facebook or whatever, and they get more hits, and pretty soon they're addicted to it, you know. I think what you have is a little glimmer of what it is. We want to be recognized, and, you know, so there's a dynamic there that might congeal. So kind of consider that, put it together as you feel you need to, but make sure you do it within the realm of a scriptural paradigm. Verse 7 says, they're ever learning, but never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. This is the last days, and this is the last of the last days. Daniel chapter 12 says, in the last days, knowledge shall increase. You know it's compounding, I mean, like every day. I mean, there's a phenomenal number out there of how quickly we increase knowledge, like double every day or something, because we got all these computers crunching, and you can Google things, and you don't even have to ask, and there's no humility anymore in not knowing, because we know we have our phone. We can just ask right now and always have the answer. It was always a humbleness for a young man, especially, to get in a crowd of older men who would, you know, get on a job site or something. They'd say, hey, let's send the new guy down to get a board stretcher down at the Lowe's. Get a board stretcher. They'd go, hey, I need a board stretcher. And the old guy, oh, yeah, well, I think they're real way back in the corner. No such thing as a board stretcher. But they like to play with their heads and mess with them. But we have not much of that going on anymore. Everybody's, what? High-minded. Because we have knowledge. It says, now as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these, verse 8, also resist the truth. Jannes and Jambres are interesting characters. Jannes means to vex. Jambres means foaming, healing. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing these two people brought forth. And these two guys, well, these guys are actually the two magicians who stood at the right hand and left hand, as it were, of the Pharaoh when Moses went in with the rod and he cast it down, turned into a serpent. These are believed to be, through rabbinical readings, the names of a couple of the primary magicians in Pharaoh's court. They could do everything that Moses did. They threw their rod down, it turned into a serpent too. But Moses' rod ate theirs. I mean, there's a little difference. But, you know, it still was a withstanding. You know, you go out there, and you know, you're always doing an apologetic. You have to live a life of apologetics. Not apologizing, but always giving an answer for why you believe what you believe. It's crazy. Even among believers, you get around people, you're always trying to make sure you get your I dotted, your T crossed, because everybody's coming at you, and, you know, the world's coming at you, and the people in the world, oh, you know, it's not really the Red Sea, it's the Reed Sea. Oh, you know, it's not really a miracle. Jesus didn't really rise from the dead. All this stuff, and you guys say, no, 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 and you're always explaining stuff that's elementary school, first principles. You know what? We got to go back there. And yet, the problem is, many times believers don't know how to answer their world. Because they throw down their rod and somebody else throws down their rod and everybody looks smart in the room and you're feeling stupid because you just said, I believe and I believe and I believe. And they say, well, why do you believe that? You don't know. And if you don't know, you feel embarrassed. They're not embarrassed. They're happy to tell you, yeah, well, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can believe what you want to believe, but I don't think that's true. And you're like, well, it matters what you believe because if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, and if you can't quote all, you know, 6 or 8 verses on resurrection, you're kind of left at the dead end of the cul-de-sac and saying, well, you know, a Jehovah's Witness comes by and says, Jesus isn't God. You're like, well, yeah, he is. Well, how about that? How do I know? I don't know. Well, they'll show you 3 verses that make it seem like he's not. But we need to know our Bibles, right? And we're always kind of being hit. This is the stuff that'll wear us out. And they'll come against us. Verse 10 says, but thou hast fully known my doctrine. Now, for those of you who have been with us for a long time, I think you pretty much know my doctrine, my teaching. Within the parameters of propriety, we're trying to make it right and get it right. He says, so you know this. Now, Interestingly, he says, you have fully known. The literal translation for fully known literally has the idea of you've been right beside me and traced it. You've actually followed me through it. Now, in those days, people were a little bit more society-oriented. Okay, they hung out with each other. Men would hang out with each other. Women dealing with children. Women would talk to the other women and say, what do I do? It's kind of broken down. But with Paul and Timothy, they were comrades. They would go together on Paul's journey. And he says, you've fully known my doctrine and my manner of life. The word manner of life is a word that means leadership. Okay, you've seen my leadership in this church if you've been here for some time. You know, we're living in a day where there's a lot of things that pull on me to do things a certain way. And, you know, I feel like I can do you some good if I just teach the word. And in fact, I read the scriptures and I kind of see that. And I've had to reassess what I've been taught because a lot of people have taught, oh, you got to do, you got to do that. The Bible, if it draws people, then I'm happy, you know, to preach and teach. And he says, my purpose, and this is prothesis. You know, a hypothesis is I come up with an idea, it's a hypo, it's under, I'm going to test it. Well, prothesis is this is what my purpose is. This is, you know, the thesis of my life that I go forward with. The thesis with my life, I hope, if you were quizzed, what is Pastor Dave's thesis? What is the prothesis of his life? What is the purpose as his ministry goes on? My purpose is to help other believers realize their purpose, which is to share Christ. You see, if you share Christ, you're going to find out you don't know as much as you think you do. And you'll go back and dig in, and the Bible will become pertinent to you. Some of you guys have been in the military. You go to battle, you see a couple bullets flying, and your gun jams up. You're going to find out, I really need to learn how to break this thing down, clean it, and put it back together, because this thing matters. And the same thing with the sword of the Spirit. You need to learn how to wield this thing. And but you don't need to if you don't ever use it, if you're not going and witnessing ever. Now, everybody doesn't do it the same. I don't want you to feel that. Sometimes your witness as a mom is to witness to your children. Right? That's your full-time job. Man, that kid needs Jesus. You read them stories about Jesus. You sing them songs with Jesus amplified. And eventually, they're going to go from your house. They're going to leave you. You want to pour into them the Lord so that they know how, as we said to the little girl earlier, they know how to die. They know how to live, but they know how to die, too. We need to help our kids. And so sometimes that being saved and childbearing thing comes to bear in regard to being able to, and back in the day, you know, 10, 12, 15, 18 kids, right? I mean, that's a big congregation. And mom got to have the smile and the biggest impact on those kids. He says, you've known my leadership. You've known my prothesis. Verse 10, my purpose. You've known my faith. Not just that I have faith, but that my faith has breadth and depth. That my faith is not just a hope-so thing. My faith has truth. It has a future and it has a past. It has a present. My faith is broad. It has all the bases covered. Some people just have faith, listen, in their faith. They have faith in their faith. Which means they don't really know many verses. They don't really know where it's going to go from here. They don't really know what the morning and the daytime holds. Do you know, you can get up and start really badly and have a bad day going. I mean, you blew it. You barked at your spouse. And then the next, 3 hours later, you're running into somebody who needs Jesus. Do you know you have all of the gifts of Christ's righteousness in you? You see, if you know your full faith, you understand that it's okay to go ahead and witness to them. You're not disqualified by that. Because everybody has those moments. You stub your toe in the middle of the night getting up to go to the restroom. Bam, you stub your toe. You're not feeling very sanctified right about that, right? You feel pretty angry. And it hurt. But the fact is that doesn't kick you out of the kingdom. You don't get kicked out of the kingdom because you stumbled. Because everybody stumbles. The thing is if you know your Bible and you know your faith, you know that that's part of it.
Well, that concludes today's portion of the message. This has been a ministry of Faith Baptist Church in Ontario, Ohio. And I'm Pastor Dave Davenport. I hope you'll join us Monday through Friday for our verse-by-verse studies. And we hope you'll tell others to tune in as well. If you'd like to contact us and learn more about our ministry, go to faithbaptist1.net. You can also download recent broadcasts on our homepage. We hope you'll make it a point to tune in daily as we go to the Word.